Good evening and welcome to From the Frontline. My name is Lenora Hammond and I have in studio here with me Peter Hammond. And today we would like to discuss a subject that no doubt is close to many people's hearts, particularly in South Africa with many things happening and the distractions that are happening. And they're perhaps keeping us away from focusing on the main thing and keeping the main thing the main thing. We see a lot of criticism and malice against ministries, Peter, and we see that people are really busy gossiping and slandering and talking about things that they perhaps don't fully understand. Why do you think people are so eager to slander other ministries?
Well, the Bible does say that the tongue is like a fire, a world of evil amongst the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and it itself is set on fire by hell. That's a quote straight from James 3 verse 6. And all of us at one time or another have been guilty of gossip, sadly. But it's a sin. And God takes gossip very seriously. And the ninth command is there for a very good reason. Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. And the tongue can really cause a lot of damage. And the amount of times we wish we had bitten our tongue. And the Bible says, whoever spreads slander is a fool. And we're commanded, brothers, do not slander one another. In fact, there's a lot of emphasis in Titus 3. The pastors are to remind people to slander no one, to be peaceable and considerate, and to show true humility towards all men. So I think those give us a hint. Why are so many people having a gift of criticism and a ministry of discouragement? Well, it's the opposite of humility, isn't it? There's this desire often to see somebody better than me or in a higher position than me pulled down. Mm. Or somehow or another, it makes the basest part of ourselves feel good when we hear some slander or gossip that puts another person in a bad light. And Dr. Martin Luther called it the inner Schweinhund. This kind of, there's this inside us, there's this ugly part. And I think in Pinocchio, what they have, that Jiminy Cricket on one side and this little demon-looking character jump on the other shoulder. And so often we've got this conflict between the flesh and the spirit, and between that which tells us what is right, our conscience, and that which subverts us to want to do what's wrong. And it's the very opposite of humility to want to put someone else in a bad light. It's the very opposite of being peaceable and considerate. You know, have you walked in that person's shoes? Do we understand anything about that person, that ministry, that country, that issue, the individual that we are taking part in the gossip or slander of? And so I think pride is often the engine that's driving this gossip industry. It's a desire to portray ourselves in a better light by portraying people that are maybe better than us in a bad light, to lift ourselves up by pulling others down. And that's why, and 1 Peter 2 verse 1 says, therefore rid yourselves of all malice and deceit and hypocrisy and envy and slander of every kind. So slander is inextricably linked in the scriptures to malice, deceit, hypocrisy, and envy.
And it also seems to me that so often the people that are the loudest about under the guise of, oh, well, we're concerned, very often those people are quite idle themselves. So they don't have a productive ministry or productive life, dare I even say. But boy, do they have a lot to say about other ministers or pastors or missions or churches or individuals who are really trying hard to work, and maybe they have fallen by the way, and maybe something has happened. But instead of praying for them, they've got to get out there and wag their finger, and very often they're idle themselves.
Wag the finger and wag the tongues, yes. The Bible warns us about those who get into the habit of being idle and going about from house to house, and not only do they become idlers, but gossips and busybodies, saying things that ought not to. Now, that's a direct quote from 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 13. So people who get in the habit of, well, these days it's not just going from house to house, it's sharing on internet and social media and so on. And I'm sure that they can do it by every media platform out there right now. And we read in 2 Thessalonians 3:11, we hear that some of you are idle. You're not busy, you're busybodies. And in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we command you, brothers, keep away from every brother who's idle. So that's in 2 Thessalonians 3:6. So it's noteworthy that most of those involved in this ministry of criticism, they've got a gift of criticism, they've got an abundance of spare time. I don't know how anyone has that much time, because those who are wholeheartedly involved in the work of the Great Commission, those who are diligent, those who are raising children, trying to do it diligently, raising them in the fear of the Lord, anyone who's got productive employment, how would they possibly have the time to be busybodies and talebearers? So numerous of those who've commissioned themselves as professional busybodies with an apostolic ministry of criticism, many of them are actually retired people with government or military pensions or some assured income of one sort or another. Many may be single people or who've never married, and certainly even those who are married can't be giving that higher priority to their family responsibilities or raising their children, because parents should not have the time that it takes to be a self-appointed investigator, prosecutor, judge, jury, executioner of the targeted minister or mission. And it's very time-consuming. We know people who have literally provided reams. Now, when we talk about a ream, there's normally 250 pages in a ream, and there are people who have provided literally reams, over 250 pages of photocopied, just think of the cost and the poor trees and the ecology, but of unwanted, unsolicited slander against different ministries, and they've delivered it to people with great joy and excitement. And I remember one person asking a missionary involved who'd received one of these things just the next day, "So what do you think of what I delivered?" And he said, "Nothing at all." And said, "Well, what have you read?" "No," he says, "and I've got no intention to." "What have you done with it?" He says, "Put it in the bin." And this man was so distraught. I mean, you can imagine all that work he put into this 250 pages. But that's the best thing you can often do with these things. Mm. An email, you delete. And when they give you a hard copy, you file it in file 13, because as 1 Timothy 6 verse 4 says, and this describes a lot of these pathological antagonists, is the name of one book about, he is conceited. He has an unhealthy interest in controversies and arguments that result in envy, quarreling, malicious talk, and evil suspicions. That's 1 Timothy 6 verse 4. And I think that is a warning. When we see someone who's interested in controversies, arguments, and the result is envy, quarreling, malicious talk, and evil suspicions, we've got to recognize this is what the Bible's warning us about, to stay away.
Yeah. And it seems to me that slander can also endanger people's lives, because even if people mean well, it could be that they say things or give away information that they were not meant to. And certainly in the work in the Middle East or the 1040 window or in Africa in certain countries, that means you could seriously endanger the missionary or the minister concerned.
Very much so. I remember at school learning the term, give a dog a bad name and you might as well hang him. And we were taught to sing, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me. Well, that's not actually true. Sticks and stones don't hurt you anything near as much as some words can. Mm. And the Bible says, 1 Peter 4 verse 15, if you suffer, it should not be as a murderer or a thief or any other kind of criminal or as a meddler, which is another term for busybody. And it's very significant that the Bible in 1 Peter 4 verse 15 puts meddlers, busybodies, in the same category as murderers and thieves. In fact, that's exactly what any obsessive antagonist becomes. They steal from other people's time. Mm. They undermine the support base of ministries. They deprive missions of the resources they need to do the Lord's work and help many people in the field. They endanger people's lives. And not only do they undermine the health of the target of their obsession and the health of his family, but they even endanger their own lives. And the law of God is clear. Leviticus 19:16. Do not go about spreading slander amongst your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I am the Lord. So, yes, slander can endanger people's lives.
And I believe you experienced some of that shortly after we were married in 1989.
Yes, well, gee, ministering in restricted access areas in communist countries, you expect to be shot at by the enemy. And I have come under fire and artillery and aerial bombardment and been arrested and imprisoned. But what you don't expect is to be stabbed in the back and shot at by your own side. Mm. And so 1989, October, we'd been married barely 6 months, and I was captured by communist troops in Mozambique and transported by Soviets in MI-8 HIP helicopters of the Red Army's Air Force. And at that crisis time, several South African and Zimbabwean journalists published reports which greatly aggravated our danger. It was like they were pouring fuel on the fire. And just some of the headlines screaming from Harare was Baptist minister, most important RENAMO backer. Now, for those people who don't know, RENAMO was the Resistance National Mozambique. They were the anti-communist resistance movement. And I was training their chaplains. I was doing ministry amongst them. And so calling me a backer of a group that the government was involved in a civil war with is, you know, seriously endangering your life. And in there, they put Peter Hammond, Cape Town-based Baptist minister, captured by Frelimo last week as the most important foreign RENAMO sponsor to be caught by Mozambique troops, and went on to relate that I was the author of Eyewitness Testimonies of Persecution and Atrocities, which exposed Frelimo's campaign of church burning and massacres in Zambezi and Tet provinces. And there was all sorts of sensational headlines. RENAMO sponsoring clergymen captured, Baptist ministers, Frelimo's top captive, missionaries linked to RENAMO. These were headlines. The curious missionaries with combat experience, evangelists of the right, preacher, gospel of their own. And one headline described us as mercenary priests. I don't think they understand what Protestant missionaries are, but we were mercenary priests. And so while I was being interrogated by SNASP, the secret police at the notorious Mashava security prison, Maputo, numerous irresponsible articles, many of them originating from Harare, spread speculation and slander, which further jeopardized our lives. And I actually had in my possession, in my files back home, at that time, a letter from the Minister of Justice of Frelimo, so-called Minister of Justice, not that they knew what justice was, Department of Religious Affairs, which warned me, on letter, it's signed, if you ever attempt to come back to Mozambique, we will kill you. Signed, unofficial letter from the government. And the reason for this extraordinary threat from a government official was clearly stated. Because of my writing and publishing of the Mozambique report, which has now been published as In the Killing Fields of Mozambique, the media reports, while I was being incarcerated in Mozambique, eagerly report that I was the author of these accounts. And it's interesting because these same journalists who espouse religious freedom of speech and freedom of the press and who decry all censorship, they were quick to point out that my writings were illegal in Mozambique and openly they celebrate my capture. Now, you would have thought any journalist would support some other journalist writing the other side, or the fact that, well, whether it's popular or not, nothing should be illegal as far as journalism goes, surely you would have thought. But these people who said censorship's evil were pointing out, but his writings are illegal in Mozambique, he should be arrested and imprisoned for the rest of his life for having written these things. So that was pretty bad. And well, it was, if they'd succeeded, well, then I wouldn't have come back and none of our children would have been born.
But the crazy thing is that sometimes these accusations or criticisms or betrayals come from your own people, within even your own organization without you knowing it.
Sadly so. In fact, I remember when I was locked up in 1987 in Zambia, Lusaka Central Prison. At that time, South Africa was in conflict with the socialist government of Kenneth Gunda, and landmines and rockets that were attacking our people over here were coming through Lusaka, and South Africa was sending in our reconnaissance command attacking terrorist bases in Zambia. So tensions were high on both sides. And so when we were arrested, and when I was brought in for my first interrogation after a night of misery in a stinking sewer of a cell with human filth and multitude of flying, crawling, biting insects, deprived of water, deprived of sleep, and when I was dragged before my interrogators, what did I see on the table in front of me? All my writings, which you can be sure I didn't travel with behind the lines on those sort of Bible smuggling operations at the time. But there were people who hated us enough to want to be sure that the people who had us knew the things that I'd written so that it would make my life even more dangerous. And the most dramatic experience of this was back in Sudan. And I've been bombed in Sudan, of course, and we've been in no-go areas and shoot on sight and no-fly zones. And so we expect to be bombed, expect to be attacked by the enemy, and we were. And interesting, the government of Sudan's hostility for missionaries like myself was made clear in a Ministry of Foreign Affairs website in Sudan. Why Churches in Sudan Are Not Bombed. That's the title. And it plainly stated, Peter Hammond should expect to be bombed when he comes to Sudan. He should expect to be shot on sight. And they gave a reason why I should expect this special treatment. because his writings make him the enemy of the government of Sudan. It's so extraordinary that the people from outside who did their best to make sure that our enemies, whether Mozambique, Angola, Zimbabwe, Zambia, or Sudan, had those writings. And in many cases, they were provided by Christians and people who'd been on a mission to endanger our lives and live there. But then there were several Christians who threatened to pass on information that would endanger our work there. I remember one man coming to me and saying, "You remember when you were bombed in Sudan at that church in Jumba?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I told the government where they could find you." And he put his head right in, close to my face, and he took the light. And there was a whole lot of our people who were bombed in a church service. 8 1,000-kilogram bombs dropped on top of us at a church service while we were running evangelism explosion training program with a team sent by Dr. James Kendi. And to think that there was a Christian who took delight in the fact that he had betrayed fellow church members into the hands of a jihadist regime. But then, shortly after that, the very next year, I was arrested along with Bishop Bulandoli and detained in Yei in South Sudan during the war. And I was accused of being, the official accusation was that I worked for Osama bin Laden, that I was working for the Sudan government, for the Arab jihadists, and I was working to undermine the people of South Sudan and to cause civil war. And, you know, all these were treasonable offences in the middle of a vicious civil war. And, you know, I said I'm the author of Faith and Defiance Sudan, and I've brought in the filmmakers who produced films like Sudan and Holocaust and so on, but these people didn't seem to know that. And we were in a situation where you don't need evidence, there's no due process, accusations are enough to damn a person, where they're likely to just put you against a wall and shoot you. Mm. And when I was trying to answer the accusations, and the bishop was too, the bishop's brother had been dragged behind a military vehicle by the Arabs until he was in pieces. They killed his brother. And I think that Bishop Bullen and I, who'd endured multiple bombardments, and Bishop Bullen's church had been bombed 10 times, and they thought we were working for the enemy. But anyway, they said, "But these accusations come from your people." I said, "What do you mean, my people?" And they said, "White people." I said, "Well, white people aren't all Christians." And he said, "No, but I mean missionaries. I mean, they claim to be missionaries. They claim to be Christians. They claim to have even worked for you." Mm. I said, "What?" And they named an individual, ex-frontline fellowship worker, whom I had dismissed the year before, and as the main person making up these accusations. And he even came up with things which no one else could have known, specific things which would be considered real secrets, because, you know, we do behind enemy lines restricted accessory work. And so I was astounded to hear the plain betrayal. And every day, all kinds of incredible accusations and intricate plot twists were revealed. And the Psalms just kept coming to mind. Even my close friend whom I trusted, "He who shared my bread has lifted up his heel against me." And just to give you a feel of how serious it was, during this interrogation, when the bishop and I were being interrogated severely, two men who were connected with us who were working in the church compound were flogged 75 lashes each to get information out of them that couldn't incriminate us. And because they had nothing to say, they kept flogging them because they were sure that there was some plot on the go. And this was caused by a so-called Christian who had been a mission co-worker who was happy to not just endanger our lives, but can you imagine 75 lashes across the back? And even when our interrogators concluded we were innocent of the charges and informed us we were free to go, they said, "But there's serious threats to assassinate both the bishop and you." And they said, "We're afraid that a petrol bomb or grenade is going to be thrown over the fence of your huts that night, that you could be shot down while fleeing from the burning tukuls." And there was, so I said, "Well, surely we could be provided with an escort." And he said, "Your accusers are tireless. Their main purpose in life is to discredit you and the bishop. Every day there's new accusations. The man you dismissed from your missions been in a public security office even this morning, handing over more papers with accusations and information against you. Some of your investigators are most concerned that should you be released, the threat to your life would only increase. There are those of the commanders who've been influenced by your accusers so that they would kill you out of hand." And I said, well, can't you provide us with an escort? And the man said, there's no escort that would be sufficient to protect you from the kind of people who are determined to have you killed. And again, it was the Psalms just coming to mind. If a foe were raising himself against me, but it's you, my companion, my close friend with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship. That's from Psalm 55. And time and again, we saw what the Bible speaks about. Your tongue plots destruction. It's like a sharpened razor. You practice deceit. You love evil, falsehood. You grow strong by destroying others. And there's warnings in the Bible. Beware of friends, for every brother becomes a deceiver and every man a slanderer. That's Jeremiah 9:4. So it's incredible, but having been a Christian now for 43 years and a full-time missionary work for over 40 years, I've come across quite a lot of examples that destroy any misconceptions about the basic goodness of man. Mm. In fact, what I've seen supports the Reformation doctrine of the total depravity of man.
Mm-hmm. So it seems you mentioned earlier how pride is often the engine which drives the gossip industry, but it would seem to me that pride is also what drives such hatred in people who maybe were once a part of a vibrant ministry or mission, and they have a fallout of some kind and they leave, and they're just never quite the same again. And suddenly they become slanderers, and they're driven by hatred, and they do more than gossip. They actually begin to invent stories and make up things that couldn't possibly be true. And they endanger your life and do such harm to the work of the Lord.
Well, I've seen this with quite a lot of ministries. I remember one of the finest ministries I came across in America, and I arrived there once and somebody invited me to go to a meal. And, you know, this man had come from South Africa, even though he had American parents, and he was born, I think, in our country. And so I ended up in his home, and as I arrived there, there was this huge amount of people in the living room, come dining room, and they were all ex-disgruntled members of this particular ministry that I'd been invited to be a guest speaker at. And they just all poured out on me, vindictive, angry, furious. Now, I knew the people at the other side well, who were being accused, very well. And I barely knew these accusers, but there were so many of them that you're almost tempted to think, well, there's so much and there's such detail here that there must be something here. Yeah. But in fact, over the years, I discovered by looking at the fruit, I could see the fruit of the ministry and the fruit of the leader of the ministry being criticized, and it was good fruit. And then I could see the accusers. Well, maybe they had a point here and there, but they'd allowed their bitterness to so fester, I didn't see any of them going on to do any constructive work. So you start to wonder at a certain point, because, okay, people are depraved. There's good in the worst of us. There's bad, even evil, in the best of us, because of the depravity of man. We fall in creation. The good that's in us because we're created by God. The evil that's in us because of the fall of man and sinfulness. So you'd expect bad things to happen, even in good ministries and even in the lives of good people. But everything that happens to us can make us either bitter or better. And a lot of it's a choice, because I've had some bad experiences with people, with individuals, with ministries, and I was a junior member. I was the youngest member of Hospital Christian Fellowship, and I could have made a big thing about some rebukes and so on that I received, and maybe what I thought were unfair treatment, but I never even thought about that because I looked at it and said, what a privilege being part of such a great ministry, and I learned so much from such a great leader as Francis Grimm, who planted Hospital Christian Fellowships in over 100 countries in the world. And was he harsh to me? Yes. Did he haul me out of bed early in the morning, middle of the night, to tidy up my desk because the Lord might come tonight? And was he difficult to work with? Yes, he was. But it was a privilege. And there's people who worked with David Livingstone who fled. In fact, his second missionary journey was a catastrophe because every one of the white European co-workers left the ministry, went back to England, started spreading slander against David Livingstone. And, you know, most people can't even remember the names of those people. But David Livingstone endured and continued. Now, was he an easy person to work with? Probably not. He was probably a difficult person to work with because he drove himself, and he had high work ethic, and no one could keep up with David Livingstone. Mm. But the fruit of the people who criticized David Livingstone was bitter and nasty. And the fruit of David Livingstone's perseverance, if he was hard And if he was tough, and if he was sometimes unreasonable or unfair, well, so what in the scheme of things? We shouldn't let the sun go down the wrath. We should be able to learn from things. And if those people had stayed with him, maybe they would have been able to temper or balance some of those concerns they had. But if you leave and just become a critical antagonist, what good does that do? Mm. And it destroys one's own credibility. So I'm very concerned about the fact that many people, for whatever reason, and we're living in an age now where most people tend to have this victimization mentality that nothing's my fault and I'm a victim and it's their fault. Mm. And in this situation, in this narrative, it's becoming awfully common that instead of, you know, I messed up, I failed, that rebuke was justified, I'm going to learn from it, I'm going to be a better person, or even, I think I was unfairly treated, but let me lay that at the foot of the cross, God's forgiven me, and I must forgive as I've been forgiven, and let me just go on with life and pray for them. But instead, if one gives into this temptation to develop a malicious ministry of gossip and slander, it'll destroy us. It'll destroy us more than the people we actually are trying to hurt, I think, in the end.
Yeah. So it seems to me that the depravity of man, we don't expect it when we're dealing with Christian people, and we don't expect it when we're dealing with other missions in particular. But what is it about the sinful nature of human beings who've been in missions maybe for a number of years, who feel that they have the right to be the leader of this ministry and to sit in judgment of other leaderships, either within his own ministry or within other ministries, and to just criticize beyond belief and drag other people in to bring the very ministry that they're supposed to be a part of down? Mm. How on earth does that help the cause of Christ? How does that help missions, ministries, churches in particular?
It certainly doesn't help. And, you know, we may not be to blame for the situation we find ourselves in, but we are to blame if we stay that way. And reactions, everything, and attitudes, everything. And life is only about 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond to it. So often it's not the issue. There are people who have suffered crippling, paralyzing injuries, like Joni Erickson, who've gone on to have great, wonderful ministries around the world on so many different levels. And they haven't allowed total paralysis from the neck down to keep them from rejoicing in the Lord and ministering. And then there's someone else who's barely had that much bad happen to them, who's so bitter and twisted. And they've got all their limbs and they've got full health and so on. But yet, you can see it's not the situation, because some people have got worse situations who are rejoicing, and other people who've got what seems to be good situations who are whinging and whining and complaining. Mm. So I'm not so convinced about the excuses or the reasons. Often it's often a choice and it's often an attitude. So yes, it's deeply distressing and disconcerting that people, instead of learning from their mistakes and failures, decide to blame someone and get in a blame game. Now, take, for example, missions. Often, especially in where we've worked in Africa, it's often hot, very hot, intense, humid. There's all kinds of noises all night, everything from the roosters, gunfire, all sorts of distracting things. It's hard to sleep. There's the biting, crawling, flying insects. There's everything from the spiders, the cockroaches, and so on. And you can understand in the intense heat and the difficulty to find something as simple as water, and then you're getting sick, everything from dysentery and bilharzia, malaria, and tick bite fever, and all these other things. In the midst of this, you know, you can behave badly, and you can... But what sometimes happens is a person comes out of what was maybe a shock for them, and instead of recognizing, you know, in the field, some of my worst characteristics came out, or I really hate how I reacted there, or what on earth was I doing, saying, or doing this. But instead, some come out and they project all their hostility and anger on the mission leader, who's obviously the personification of why they went through all this. Mm. Not that we didn't warn people ahead of time that these are what often happens in the field. But, you know, being hungry, being thirsty, being afraid. I remember a team that I took into the field, and we came under aerial bombardment, and they turned on me in such anger and hostility immediately after. How could you bring us here? I'd told them, I'd shown them, they'd seen the presentations, they'd seen the pictures, they'd seen, but they knew people get bombed at church services, but the initial reaction of people after being under fire is, in many cases, hostility to whoever's nearest at them. And you can't get angry at the bomber pilot who's just flown off there. And they turn on the person next to them, who is also diving for cover and is covered in all the debris caused by the explosions and scorched by the explosions. And yet somehow I've experienced that hostility. And then I've also had it where there's the girlfriend, the mother, the fiancé or the wife of the missionary who went in the field, and they develop a real hostility to me because I'm the mission leader and I personify why their beloved one was put in the way of danger, in harm's way. And that's a hard thing to handle. But there's many different things that come to us during our life, which, whether it was sickness or whether it was danger or whatever discomfort that we were put through, and we can take it as a sacrifice we made as unto the Lord to help fulfill the Great Commission, or we can make ourselves a victim and blame someone who we think is responsible. And so at the end of it, we see some bizarre things. I mean, I've been compelled to deal with people who have sworn, cursed, physically attacked me, declaring for the entire mission house to hear that he intended to kill me, but using the foulest language imaginable. We've had to be physically carried out of the mission. I've had people not only leaving the mission in anger, but stealing our vehicles while doing so, on more than one occasion, literally hijacking a vehicle and hijacking ministries, accounts, and people have been fired from the mission for accessing internet pornography, going out and deciding to make a lifetime of attacking the mission because we uncovered, not that we ever made it known to others, but there's people who, why are you no longer with the mission? Well, instead of saying, I really failed or I messed up, I sought the Lord, and this is one person, I prayed and the Lord guided me away from the mission and so on. And meanwhile, the person was fired for gross immorality. And now they make themselves out to be morally superior. And God spoke to me, an angel appeared and whatever. And the next thing you've got visions, dreams, and this spiritualized, you read this thing, is this the same, double check, is this the person that we just counseled lovingly and tried to help on this issue? Yeah. But this is the thing. Often when you hear a story about a mission or ministry and so on, and if you look and you look at the fruit, here's the fruit of the group or individual being attacked, and there's the fruit of the one doing the attacking. It should be fairly obvious pretty quickly that in the space of several years, you can see the fruit of the spirit or the fruit of the flesh and which side it is. But somehow or another, it doesn't matter what a failure some people can be in different areas. Instead of becoming better, they become bitter. They choose to become bitter. And then they make it all the fault of the people who are out there still doing the work.
Yeah, that's very sad. So just going back to this concept of Christian-friendly fire, what if, I mean, you certainly never expect to be shot by your own side. You don't expect to be criticized by your own side. And sadly, the more Christian or even if other ministries are attacking other ministries, it kind of lends a credibility to their criticism. So what do you do in a case when a ministry might be coming under fire and you're not entirely sure what to believe? You really feel uncertain about the truth, but because you don't want the media to have a field day, how do you come alongside another ministry and lovingly support them, even if there are problems that need to be dealt with? How do you lovingly support them without joining the world's criticism and slander and gossip?
Well, I mean, if you just think of it as a family matter, there are things you would say to your family members that you'd never put out for publication in the local scandal rag. And there are serious issues you may have with a relative that you would never take to the police or to the courts. And in fact, the Bible tells us, don't take fellow believers to court. That it's a scandal and disgrace when Christians go to the world's courts. And I understand that sometimes it may be necessary. There could be some real criminal cases where one's exhausted every other means. But generally speaking, one should not be rushing to the world's media or to the hostile secular humanist entertainment industry or news media or to the courts, which in many cases are run by people who don't like Christians and would be delighted to find against a Christian cause and undermine principles of religious freedom and so on. So let's divide it up. There's legal issues, there's moral issues, there's spiritual issues, there's things that affect the outside world, and there's things that affect the family itself. So obviously, if you have to discipline your child, you don't want that discipline done by the local police or by the local mafia gang. And similarly, if some good friend or neighbor or family member is involved in something, surely you'd want to resolve it internally rather than externally. So let's take a ministry, and I know a whole lot of ministries have come under serious fire. My first natural knee-jerk reaction is defend them against everything that's unfair, unbalanced, illegal, or unbiblical, and so on. So you would think, look, to defend people against unjust accusations is not to endorse every single thing that they may be involved in. Just like self-defense of myself against clear and present danger doesn't mean that I'm saying I'm a sinless, perfect person without faults. We know we've got faults. We know we fail. But that doesn't mean we don't have the right to defend ourselves. And similarly, if our friends and neighbors come under attack, the fact that they may have failed on some levels and that they may be guilty of some extremely unwise, even unbiblical practices, does not mean they don't deserve our support against the world's unjust, unfair, unbalanced accusations. But now we come alongside them as friends, neighbors, colleagues, co-workers, allies. And after we've stood up for them against the unjust, unfair, we may want to give some advice in terms of, you realize this point here is unbiblical, and it would be very wise if you followed this principle in Scripture, which would protect you from that kind of accusation. Even if these accusations are, on balance, unfair, yet sometimes there's some things that we could have allowed it to happen, and I recognize that. Even when we've come under fire, even when we've been arrested, even when we've been attacked and slandered and so on, we've got to ask ourselves, what did we do wrong? What could we have done better? How could we have avoided this? What mechanisms could we put in place to protect us from this sort of accusation or physical attack? And it's just balanced. So to me, it's so easy for us to fall into the extremes. So the one extreme is, there's nothing wrong, head in the sand. And the other extreme is, it's totally irredeemably evil, there's nothing good. Well, both those extremes are completely and utterly off the wall and unhelpful. But again, to me, the general principle is praise in public, criticize in private, if at all possible, especially with fellow Christians. We don't want to hang out a dirty washing before the world, nor do we want to give ammunition to a hostile world. Just think of South Africa, for example, in this present climate of expropriation without compensation of a secular humanist government who's trying to restrict religious freedoms and even take away property rights. The last thing you want to do is give them any ammunition that they could use against a fellow ministry. But on the other hand, there's a lot in all of our churches that's unbiblical, unwise, compromising, everything from the inefficient through to the immoral even. And that's why a key emphasis of any ministry has got to be back to the Bible for reformation and revival. We need to apply the Lordship of Christ to all areas of life. We need to evaluate everything in light of the Scriptures. We need to be like the Bereans who study to see if the things that we've been taught are so. And that's in the context of the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul was teaching the Bereans, and they were going back to Scriptures to compare his teaching with the Bible to see that it was consistent. And that's commendable. That's what we're told to do in the Bible. Don't take any leader's word for it. You've got to go back to the Bible. Sola Scriptura. Scripture alone is the ultimate authority.
Yeah, well, just in the light of so much unfriendly and friendly fire against Christianity in general. I mean, if you look at politically what's happening in the United States, what's happening with the Black Lives Matter and all the nonsense that's going on in South Africa, it's just we need to stand together as God-fearing, believing Christians. And when our own house is not even in order, how dare we go out and begin to slander and gossip about other ministries? So I think it's very important that we stand together as brothers and sisters in Christ and lovingly admonish one another, help one another in private, as you say, and not join the world's bandwagon of criticism and they've got it coming and this is about time. And we really don't want to do that. We need to beg for wisdom and guidance and discernment, surely on every level.
Yes, so just think of the biblical principle, the key principle, what our Lord Jesus said is the heart of the law, that summarizes the second table of the law. Do to others as you would like them to do to you. Mm. And then the other principle of judge not or condemn not so that you not be judged. For the measure by which you judge others, you will be judged by. Now, if the critics who are out there giving a hostile, secular, in many cases, anti-Christian media, pearls of gossip, or maybe pearls is the wrong word, and they are giving ammunition to the enemy, would you like your worst enemies to be doing the same thing? Is this the way you would like to be treated? Mm. Do any of us think that we are so without any sin, spot, or blemish, that we unimpeachable, nobody could... It's just because today this group's being attacked doesn't mean that you can't be in line next. Mm. And it also reminds me of a famous friendly fire incident. Now, the Americans have got this weird term called friendly fire, and friendly fire is not friendly. It's when you get shot by your own side, and they're sometimes called collateral damage. My father said that in the Second World War, when they saw the Italian Air Force overhead in the North African desert, they wouldn't bother diving for cover because they reckoned the Italian Air Force couldn't hit them even if they tried. When they saw the Luftwaffe, they dived for cover because they knew these people were efficient. They said when they saw the Royal Air Force, they dived for cover. They said when they saw the American Air Force, they all dived for cover. They said because the American Air Force seemed to have the attitude of bomb them all and let God sort it out. Mm-hmm. He said they were notorious for friendly fire. They would bomb their allies and their own troops by accident frequently. And so one of the worst incidents in history probably is at the Battle of Chancellorsville. The American general Thomas Jackson, otherwise known as Stonewall Jackson, who was the hero of how many different great battles, and he had won a spectacular victory at the Battle of Chancellorsville, but in the dying light of the day, as the sun was setting and he was scouting out and the lines had got tangled and confused, his own side shot their own general by accident. And when General Stonewall Jackson died as a result of these wounds, inflicted by friendly fire, the Confederate cause was actually doomed. They lost the war, basically, on that, because many military historians are of the conviction that had Stonewall Jackson been alive at the critical Battle of Gettysburg, the Confederates would have won the battle. The battle was very tight, and it was at several points. For example, the first day's battle, the Confederates had plainly won, but they had failed to secure the high ground on the first day, which Robert E. Lee saw the need, and he said, secure the high ground, if practicable, which was just a polite way of saying, secure the high ground. Thomas Jackson would have understood, but there was a different general working under Lee at that stage, and he just left it to the next day. And if they had fulfilled Lee's orders and secured the high ground, as Thomas Jackson certainly would have done, that night the Union forces would have been defeated. But that night the Union forces could move in, entrench themselves in the high ground, and even at that point, Stonewall Jackson would have moved to outflank them or retire to choose on ground more favorable to them. But his successors went into the same kind of trap that Lee and Jackson had set for the Union force at Fredericksburg. And to the devastating results of Pickett's charge, courageous but futile, cost the South the war. And so the consequence of friendly fire to this day continued to be devastating to the cause of fulfilling the Great Commission. Mm. I can give numerous, hours-long, scores of examples of friendly fire in my 40 years of being a missionary, where I've seen ministries undermined, sabotaged, or destroyed by friendly fire, where maybe well-meaning, sometimes maybe maliciously motivated, but the fact is fellow Christians and missionaries or church leaders have sabotaged the work of other ministries, and maybe they didn't always understand what they were doing at the time, but the end result was the same. Mm. It's what you call friendly fire. When we and in a war, we've got to ask, do we ever dare waste our time fighting our own side? Mm. And it's inexcusable. So I think we've got to say to all those involved in pathological antagonism or ministry of criticism, are you getting your target right?
Yeah.
Let's love our brethren and let's fight the enemies of the faith. Let's never fight fellow believers.
And I think we all need to be reminded this evening as we close this program out now that we are at war. We are at war within South Africa. We're at war, Christ against Satan, and we must not play into the hands of our enemies. Ecclesiastes 12 verse 14 says, God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. God will be our judge. So if you would like to read more about this, we can recommend the book called Character Assassins, which deals with ecclesiastical tyrants. You can go onto our website, christianlibertybooks.co.za, if you'd like to find other resources. Peter, anything in closing as we say goodbye?
Yes, well, Character Assassins includes messages like When All Men Speak Well of You, which is also available as video and audio and PowerPoint, and Coping with Controversy and Conflict. So there's a lot of hurting ministers out there and missionaries who need hope and healing. And so Character Assassins would help in When All Men Speak Well of You.
Thank you for joining us once again. We will see you and talk to you again next week. God bless. Bye-bye.